Dr. Jerry, you got the whole world waiting. Been ready for you to start the conversation. Your point of view, it got the haters confused. Leave it up to you to bring us all the good news. Positive vibes and the sex appeal too. Dr. Andre Jerry, can I get an interview?
Hello, hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Live with Dr. Andre. Hey, I'm glad you guys are tuning in. Happy New Year to everyone. You know, you really don't hear a lot of people say Happy New Year after about the 3rd of January. It's like all of the excitement leaves after the 3rd. So if you say Happy New Year to someone after like the 3rd, they're going to be like, oh yeah, Happy New Year. You know, New Year, same old shit. But I really do hope that you have had a great start to your 2025. Does anybody do anything special for New Year's anymore? I always wanted to do something like really exciting for New Year's. Like when I was younger, I always fantasized about being in Times Square on New Year's Eve and, you know, watching the ball drop and watching the confetti fall and all of that and being out there with all the people. But as I grew up and, you know, got to experience New York a bunch of times, I was like, you know, this ain't all that. New York is kind of dirty. It's kind of nasty. The subway is gross. You'll get robbed. So, like, the novelty of, you know, being in New York and all of that, it kind of definitely wore off for me after a while. And now that I'm older, I don't want to be anywhere near, like, Times Square on New Year's Eve. You know, but it seems like every year, someone is trying to drag me up there. And I'm like, no, no, it'd be just my luck that the one time I go, it's some type of terrorist attack or, I don't know, some crazy person driving a car through the crowd or something like that. So no Times Square for me. But I did get to do something a little different and exciting this year for New Year's. I went on a New Year's cruise with a very special friend of mine. It was a 7-day Royal Caribbean cruise. It was called, they have a number of these, but the one that I was on was called Wonder of the Seas. And, you know, after my very first cruise, I swore I would never go on another cruise. This was about 15 years ago. First of all, it was on Carnival Cruise Line, which it is the largest cruise company. It has about 45% of the market share, but it's also what I commonly refer to as a floating elementary school. I remember there being so many kids on that damn ship. It's like they were everywhere, screaming, jumping, yelling. And it was in September. I remember it being in September, like well after Labor Day. So I was kind of taken aback at how many kids were on this cruise. I mean, it wasn't like we were in the middle of the summer. It was late fall. You know, school goes back sometimes in August, you know, but definitely in September. So I'm like, where are all these kids coming from and why aren't they in school? You know, so that was strike one for me. I was like, nope, never again. The second thing, my first cruise was a family cruise. Okay. I know a lot of people in my family are listening, but it was a family cruise. And I'm just going to say this. Very few of us have the type of family that you would want to go on a 4-day, 5-day, or, you know, goodness, a 7-day cruise with. The ship ain't that big. I'm getting so many texts. I'm not even going to look at them. The ship ain't that big. You can't hire from anybody on these ships. You know, the very people who you try to avoid on the ship, maybe it's a weird couple or just a stupid-looking person that you're like, oh, I'm so sick of seeing that hoe or whatever. You're going to run into that same person everywhere. They're going to be in the restaurants, at the bar. That's just how it is on a cruise. So you can't run from people. And from my experience on a family cruise, you're not going to be just, you know, able to chill. There's always going to be that one person that's going to be the ringleader or the family coordinator, and they're going to be like, hey, you know, let's meet here and let's go to eat together and let's do this tomorrow. No, how about not? How about you leave me the hell alone and just, you know, y'all do whatever, you know? But some people like that type of stuff, you know? It just depends. I don't. When I'm on a cruise, I want to be left the hell alone. I don't want to see nobody. I don't want to eat at the same time. None of that. So between that first cruise being like a family cruise and then with all the children, I really didn't have a good time. I couldn't wait to get off that boat. And, you know, anyone who even mentioned a cruise to me after that, I cussed them out, you know. So when my family found out that I was on a cruise not too long ago, they were like, what? A cruise? I know you lying. But the second cruise, I have to say it was actually pretty good. It was Royal Caribbean. So, you know, Royal Caribbean has a bit more of a sophisticated vibe. You know, you had your families and kids and all of that, but nowhere as many kids as like a Carnival or Disney. Royal Caribbean cruises, they're catered more to, I would say, adults and couples. You know, there's a big focus on adult entertainment. They have comedy clubs. They have karaoke bars. They have nightclubs. They have a lot of pubs, lounges, a few high-end restaurants, and all types of stuff. So everything is very much set up for like a date night type vibe. It's that type of environment. They have casinos. The casinos are very nice. There were actually two on the ship that we were on. I'm not much of a gambler, so I didn't play. And plus, there was some confusion about whether or not, you know, when you got a payout, was it going to be in real money or was it going to be in points that you could only redeem on board? So between me not being a gambler and then the ambiguity about that, I just decided not to play. I didn't fool with it, because if I had played and I won a jackpot only to find out that it wasn't real money that I won, I would have been pissed. I would have been too pissed. And, you know, but aside from all that, it was a very nice experience. So I would say that if you're someone who's interested in going on a cruise this year, like with your girlfriend, boyfriend, spouse, significant other, or whatever, I definitely recommend Royal Caribbean. If you have kids, you know, and it's going to be a family thing, then take your ass on Carnival or Disney cruise. Don't ruin everybody else's trip with your wild, loud kids on Royal Caribbean. Just don't do it. You know, trust me, they'll be much happier on Disney or on Carnival, because there'll be 1,000 other kids on the ship to play with. So if you got kids, just get on Carnival. Carnival will be your best bet. Disney can get kind of pricey, unless, you know, your kids are just in love with Disney. I would probably go Carnival, because it's more cost effective, you know. What else I wanted to... Oh, this is something else I love about Royal Caribbean. Okay, so they have this exclusive area on the ship that's only for adults. It's called the Solarium. It's on the front end of the ship. Either the front end or the back end. I can't think it's the front end of the ship. But basically, it's like a high-end covered pool deck. You know, they have like multiple hot tubs. The hot tubs are on the end. So, it has like an incredible view of like the ocean. So it's kind of like you're in a hot tub in the ocean or whatever. It's kind of an illusion effect to it, but it's very nice. They have multiple of the hot tubs. They have wading pools with the little lounge chairs where you can drink and socialize. Of course, they have a bar, and it's just a great place to kind of get away from everybody and just chill. Read a book if you have one, and just kind of get away from all the noise and the craziness on the ship. Okay, look, Royal Caribbean. I this is like a commercial, but, you know, somebody from Royal Caribbean better call me. But the one last thing I'll say about the cruises, if you're thinking about taking one this year, don't buy the drink package. Don't fall for that. They're going to try to sell you the drink package. I don't really care how much of a drinker you are. Very few people can outdrink me. Don't get the drink package. You're going to lose money. If you drink a lot of sodas and stuff like that, then yeah, you would want to get the non-alcoholic beverage package. You would want to get that. That doesn't cost that much. Because when you get on board, they're going to give you, say you got the non-alcoholic beverage package. When you get on board, they're going to give you this special, it's like a sippy cup type thing, like something you would get from Six Flags or something. It's going to be coded in some kind of way. I don't know where they put a barcode or some type of something on it, but it works with all of the beverage machines on board, you know. What are those drink machines when you go like to McDonald's or something like that and you can pick all the different little sodas? It's like that, but you can't put a regular cup or a regular glass in there. It's only going to work for special cups that have the little magnetic piece or code or something to it. So that's how they kind of regulate the sodas and the drinking package. If you don't have a alcoholic, it's not an alcoholic package. If you don't have the non-alcoholic beverage package, then the only thing you're going to be able to drink are like tea, water, juices, like apple juice, orange juice, different type of juices, maybe some cranberry juice, coffee, things like that. So if you know you can't live without your sodas and stuff like that, then definitely get the non-alcoholic beverage package. But whether you're a drinker or not a drinker, do not get the alcoholic beverage package, because every video I've watched and even after seeing it for myself, you're going to lose money. You just can't drink. You're going to try to drink more than you normally would drink to try to even everything out, and it's just not a good thing. Just order your drinks like you normally would. We found out about happy hour a little bit too late. More than likely, they're going to have like a happy hour from 3 to 5 where drinks that normally will cost, like a glass of wine normally costs $11, maybe $13, depending on what you get. But during, happy hour, you can get it half off. And Royal Caribbean, with the wine we were getting like $5 glasses of wine. So we didn't find that out until like day 3. And had we known those first couple of days, that would have saved us a lot of money. But yeah, the alcoholic beverage packages just aren't the best bang for your buck. Now, what you can do, before you get on the ship, get you 2 bottles of whatever you drink. If you drink wine, get you 2 bottles of wine. If you drink liquor, get you 2 bottles of liquor. Put it in your bag and then shut up about it. When you get to the cruise ship area, you're probably going to get there on like a shuttle van. You know, some people drive there and park, but that's a whole nother expense. You're probably going to take a shuttle from your hotel to the cruise line area. When they drop you off there, you're going to see everybody getting off the shuttle, and they're going to be giving their luggage to the luggage attendants. Like 90% of the people are going to be doing that. They're going to be giving their luggages and their bags to the folks. They're going to put them on these big carts and take them off somewhere. I don't know where they take them. That is not obligatory. Do not give your bags to the attendants. First of all, I don't know what they do with those bags and where they take them. You know, they end up, you know, right beside your door. So by the time you get up to your room, they'll be at your door. But in between that process, I don't know what happens. And then, of course, you're going to, you know, they're going to be looking for a tip as well. What I would do, you get there, you follow take your luggage, don't give it to anybody. They're going to be calling you, sir, ma'am. Don't pay them any attention. You don't have to do that. Follow the signs that direct you to the check-in area and just go through those lines with your luggage. You are going to have to put your bags through the little X-ray machines, or infrared or whatever, you know, the same way you have to do at the airport. But primarily what they're looking for is prohibited items, stuff like weapons and knives and, you know, other types of contraband. They don't really care how many bottles of wine or liquor or in your bag. Now, if you have a bag with like nothing but bottles and stuff like that, then yeah, you're probably gonna, you know, get those confiscated, because that's it looks like you're then selling and bartering and doing illegal type stuff. 1, 2, 3 bottles, nobody's gonna bother you. Now, if you call the cruise line ahead of time and ask, they'll tell you, you know, you can bring 2 bottles per passenger. But in my experience, having just gone through this, you probably could bring more, because no one even cared to check. When I bought 2 bottles of wine, because that's all I thought we could bring. And I didn't even have them in my my little roller bag. I had them in a shopping bag in my hand. So it was very apparent that I was bringing in bottles. They never asked me about them. They never asked what was in it. They never asked me to open it. It just was kind of, they didn't care. And so I was kind of a little pissed, because I was like, damn, we could have brought more, you know? So that, to me, that's the most cost-effective way to still enjoy beverages and alcohol on the cruise ship. Definitely take the bottles of whatever you drink. And then maybe one of you get the non-alcoholic drink beverage, because both of you don't need to get it. One person get the one with the sodas and everything, and then they can take their cup and give you Coke or whatever you know, and you can mix and make your little own drinks. There's no need for 2 people to get them. It ain't that much sodas in the world. So you can save a little money with that, but definitely do not buy that alcohol package. Sorry, Royal Caribbean, you know, if y'all want to slide me some money, y'all know those drink packages ain't hitting on shit, and people lose money left and right. Okay, so anyway, so long story short, yes, I had a pretty nice start to the year because of that cruise. So I always wanted to do something exciting, like as the new year rolled in. So being out on the Atlantic Ocean, you know, and, you know, when the new year came, it was a nice experience, because normally I'm at home or in a restaurant. It's never any place exciting, you know, so it was exciting to do something a little different to bring in the new year. Other than that, I'm still getting acclimated to this Ohio weather. The winters here are a little different. They kind of catch you off guard. When I got here in October, it was nice, and it seemed like by the time Thanksgiving came around, we've been buried in snow ever since. And I lived in Boston for like 2 years, and it was cold and there was snow, but not like here. Boston has pretty snow. Like, it'll be 30 degrees, maybe during a snowstorm it's like 20 degrees, 19. Here it's like 7 degrees, -2, high of 15 degrees. And the snow is hard. I have a car that's buried in snow. It's been buried in snow for almost a month. And it won't even start. I was able to dig half of the car out and get in and try to start it. It didn't even make a sound. And I think that's because it's just been sitting buried under snow for a few weeks. So I don't know how that's going to work out. Even my truck, it normally just starts right up. Now it has to, it does this little slow crank, like it's trying to make up its mind whether it's going to start. And I know it's the weather. So, you know, someone told me I should have got a garage when I got here, just paid the little extra money for a garage. But I didn't do it, trying to be frugal, Mr. Frugal. But a garage definitely would have came in handy here, because like I said, I got one car that I can't even use right now. But, you know, aside from the crazy weather up here, I like Ohio okay. I won't say it's the most glamorous place that I've lived, but I do enjoy the novelty of being someplace different and being immersed in a new environment. In terms of my job, I like it. I couldn't ask for a better boss. I've had, I don't know what's been going on, the past The past three bosses I've had have been assholes. This guy is really sweet. Like, he's not on a power trip. He doesn't feel threatened by me. He's just not doing fucked up shit on the job. Because I'm the type of person, I told you this in one of my other shows when I was ranting and talking about random topics. If you start coming for me for no reason, it's one thing if I'm at work being a dick, but if you just come for me for no reason, then I'm just going to take this approach like, okay, bare minimum, all you get. Because don't fuck with me. Like, I'm a good guy. I do my very best. I go above and beyond, actually, at work. But all that above and beyond stuff stops once you start coming for me for no reason or just start acting stupid. This guy is just a different caliber. I've almost been taken aback at how nice of a person he is. Now, he's not a pushover. I can tell he got his side, too, that, you know, I'm nice, but don't push me. But he's fair. If someone is fair and, you know, treats you with respect and just kind of lets you do your thing, doesn't micromanage you or how you supervise your team and all of that, I mean, what else can you ask for? So I'm really blessed in that regard. Normally, after a year, I start kind of looking around like, okay, what's going on in the next place? But still not saying I'm going to do it, but I could see being here 2 years uninterrupted. I could see that. I would have to get used to the weather, which I will, but I could see doing 2 years. Now, beyond that, it's just not, if you look at my resume, it's just not in my nature to stay beyond 2 years. It has to be a unique situation. But I really do like my job. I like my boss. I like my team. I got a few knuckleheads, but they're good people. You know, I can deal with a little slackerness here and there. You know, I get it. Some government folks are just going to be that way. That's one of the perks of working for the government. You can kind of just coast, you know. You don't have to go all out if you want to. You're relatively safe and stable. So that's one of the perks about being a federal employee. You almost have to bring a bomb to work before you would ever get fired, you know. So it's very stable. And but yeah, I like it here. I'm on this hybrid work schedule, so I'm only required to go into work twice a week. That's nice. Now, I normally go in almost every day, you know, except Fridays or something like that. But it's nice to have the option to, if I want to, I only have to go in 2 days out the week. So really just kind of got it made here and just doing my best to learn my job and do the best I can each day. It's kind of weird working or supervising a team where the people on your team know more about the job than you do. You know, I never profess to know everything about logistics. I'm still a student in logistics. I understand that I'm in leadership and all of that, but I am still learning. And I would say 85% of my team know more than me. You know, so I always like to have an open mind. I don't know it all. I'm open to hearing other approaches, other ways of doing things. And then there are some times where I, you know, I do have a better approach. And so I'll make that known. And, you know, but I think as long as I never wanted to go in as being this tough, mean supervisor or just micromanager or it has to be this way type person. You know, I've worked for all different types of supervisors. I know what works. I know what sucks. I know what, you know, so I don't want to be that guy. I'm not that guy that, your supervisor walks up on you and you're on your phone and they kind of give you that look. It's like, you know, I get it, you know. Yeah, I'm not going to be like that. You know, as long as you do your work, the only time you're going to have an issue with me is that I'm having to do your job because you're not doing yours. So I have to do my job and on top of that, do your stuff too, because you're being a slacker. And okay, then we're going to start running into some problems and some corrective action will need to be made. But aside from that, I just really try to leave people alone, let them do their thing, and just provide guidance where I can and assist where I can. So that's my approach to leadership. What else is it? You know, I don't know how much longer we're going to be able to do this hybrid work schedule stuff. You know, we have a new president now. He's not new, but he's, I don't know what to call him. Y'all know. I don't even like saying his name. Let me tell you what I did. So I went and through my phone, like whether it was YouTube, my news feeds, all of that, if it had anything to do with politics or if it had Trump's name or just, I would just hit not interested, not interested, not interested, not interested. And after a while, after I would say about 3 or 4 days, my news feed just completely changed. Like occasionally something with Trump or something with politics would come up. But for the most part, I have erased all that stuff. I just kind of live in my own world. I don't want to hear anything about that man. I have one friend in my life who every day I tell him, I don't want to hear anything about that man. And you know who I'm talking about, and you're listening right now, and you're probably laughing. He cannot help himself. He every day tells me something else about this bitch. I'm like, I don't want to know. Let me live in my world where he don't exist. I know he exists. I know I'm going to have to probably walk past his picture every day at work, but I don't tell me anything about this man. He told me something that I did appreciate, though, this morning. Apparently, at the end of his inauguration that I did not watch, there was an Episcopal bishop, a woman. I could tell she was probably a lesbian in her private life, but she used her moment during the inaugural prayer service to directly address President Trump. She urged him to have mercy and compassion for LGBTQ people and undocumented migrant workers. And while she was talking, she was looking directly at Trump. And of course, they showed Trump. He was pissed. You could just tell he was just seething, you know, with contempt. But what I admired about this woman, this bishop, first, what I admired was her courage. You know, imagine having the fortitude to address the president of the United States. You know, let's be frank, he's a bully. He's a bully, but he's still, despite all of his whatever, he's the president of the United States. And to just speak that directly to him and appeal to his sense of decency, any that he might have, and, you know, ask him to show mercy and compassion to marginalized groups of people. And she did it in such a peaceful, non-aggressive manner. You have to look up the video. It's on YouTube. She's been all over the news. And like I said, the only reason why I even know about this is because of my friend who, he can't help it. He's going to tell me something about Trump every day. Whether it's an executive order or just something he said, or that, he's going to tell me something every day. So I'm not even going to I'm not going to fight it. But I'm glad he showed me this because I always like to see how or when someone stands up to a bully. You know, I shared many, many, many episodes ago that I was bullied as a child. And for the most part, I did not stand up for myself. So when I see someone else standing up to a bully, I really love to see that. And when you watch the video, you'll see she did it with mildness and meekness. She was gentle. And, you know, those are godly qualities. That's what I loved about it. And I really believe that her words are going to have more of an impact than we realize once history is written. Her name is Reverend Marianne Edgar Budde, B-U-D-D-E, Reverend Marianne Edgar Buddy. Look her up. Look her up tonight. The entire video is probably like less than 2 minutes long, if that. But anyway, let's pivot. I don't want to give too much of my time, my airtime, talking about our president. He's going to be dominating the news cycle for the next 4 years or longer. So, you know, just have at it. I hope he does every single thing that he said he was going to do and more, because he was very forthcoming this time about where he stood, what he was about, who he was for, what he wanted to accomplish. And now that he's been duly elected, hey, have fun. And, you know, everybody enjoy the next 4 years. We have taken for granted the freedoms that we have in this country and the liberties that we enjoy and the prosperity that we've all been free to pursue. And not to mention the peace and security, that just the peace of mind that we are relatively safe, you know, in our homes, in our communities, and in this country. And since the majority of us have embraced this politics and this culture of division, hatred, chaos, confusion, we're all just about to experience a wild ride, I think. And I don't want to hear any crying or complaining. I don't want to hear any fake outrage that you can't believe that he would do this, or I can't believe he would do that, or I don't want to hear it. Deal with it. Work around it as best you can. Make the best of it. But don't dare complain, because we had an alternative. Anyway, on that note, folks, let's take a quick break. And when we return, we're going to talk about some lighter topics. I'll tell you guys about LaSanse 2025. We're going to talk about what's going on with Wendy Williams. I normally don't talk about stuff like this, but I want to talk about it. And I want to tell you guys about my new guilty pleasure. So sit tight. We'll be right back.
back live with Dr. Andre Geary.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Live with Dr. Andre. And thanks for staying tuned in after the break. If you're just joining us, we've been talking about random topics, you know, New Year's, cruises, Ohio weather. We talked about my new job. And we talked about this amazing woman named Reverend Marianne Edgar Buddy. Be sure to look her up tonight on YouTube and watch her speech. So anyway, listen, before the break, I promised that we'd touch on some lighter topics. So let's start with L'Essence 2025. Okay, so if you haven't heard what L'Essence is, and you have to bear with me because I'm not Puerto Rican, so there may be some nuances and some details about this that I'm failing to mention, but L'Essence is short for Las Fiestas de la Calle San Sebastián, or it's also called San Sebastián Street Festival. And what it is one of Puerto Rico's biggest and most vibrant celebratory annual parties and celebrations. It takes place in Old San Juan, which is kind of like downtown San Juan, but it's Old San Juan is very, well, it's very old, but its architecture is very, very beautiful and just nuanced. You know, all that stuff was built by the slaves hundreds of years ago. But anyway, L'Essence is usually in mid-January, and it marks the end of the holiday season. And, you know, there's music, there's parades, there's like traditional foods and all types of setups with artisan markets and things like that. And the whole energy of it is just electric. And so it's bringing together the local people, many visitors, many people who are from the island and, you know, migrated to the States and they come back for L'Essence. It's very unique. It's very cultural. If you're someone that's into cultural experiences, you'll love L'Essence. There's a lot of Puerto Rican pride. So you'll see a lot of the flags. You'll see just, you know, dancing, laughter, the history. And there's just community spirit. It's perfect if you are planning to visit Puerto Rico for the first time and haven't visited. It's a great time of year to go. The weather is not going to be too hot, and you'll get to see true Puerto Rico, true Puerto Ricans, and just how warm they are. And I'm sure you've heard this before. When you go to Puerto Rico, the people are very warm and friendly. You got assholes there too, like everybody else. But for the most part, you know, they are very welcoming. I remember when I moved to Puerto Rico in late 2018, one of the first things I experienced there was a parade in the street. And we lived on the street where there was a hospital, it was a children's hospital called San Jorge Children's Hospital. And it's where they treated children, you know, for a range of different ailments and sicknesses. And to cheer the kids up, they would throw this annual parade in the streets right in front of the hospital. And so all the children who were sick and confined to the hospital, they were able to look out the window and maybe come out and see, you know, it just would lift their spirits. And that's just how Puerto Ricans are. Any excuse to party, celebrate life, that's what they're all about. And so, and that's why I love it there. But that party is a great introduction to Puerto Rico if you've never gone. So it's, again, every mid-January. And, but, you know, trying to find a hotel around that time is very difficult. So if you know you want to go next year, really, you need to start planning for where you're going to stay now. Because, like, right now, if you try to book a hotel close to Old San Juan or something like that, they're probably going to tell you they're already booked up for the next year. You know, so I've run into that a couple of times now, and it's just a huge party. And we were talking about cruises earlier. the port is also at Old San Juan. So normally around that time, there are like several cruise ships that dock during that week. And so they're also able to, you know, have participation in the celebration, and it's even more crowded. This year, I think they had some type of issue with the port. I don't know if it's being repaired or if all of that is done. But I know they mentioned on the news that they would be closing some or all of the port down, so there wasn't as many or any cruise ships that year, but it was still very packed. I wish I could show you guys the pictures I took, but it was just packed. It was great, a great vibe. But definitely something to experience if you're into that type of thing. So definitely try to go online, and you can go on YouTube and just put La Sanse 2025. You'll see all types of videos, and you get a sense of how it is. So that's what I did last week. Usually whenever I'm not here, I'm someplace warm. And usually every chance I get, I go back to Puerto Rico just to absorb some of the sun and the culture and, you know, try to work on my Spanish and just enjoy friends and family. So that's what I did this past week. So I wanted to tell you guys about that. And I also wanted to tell you about, before we get into the Wendy Williams stuff, or should I end on my other thing I wanted to talk about, my new guilty pleasure? You got about 20 minutes or so. Okay. Let's go ahead and talk about Wendy Williams first. I don't want to end on that because it's kind of sad what's happening to her. So I don't know if you guys have been watching. She's been kind of on a, I don't want to call it a press tour, but she's like, it's a press tour because she's been on The Breakfast Club. And I think first she did something with, what's his name? Don Lemon. So if you don't know what's been going on with her, she is supposedly ill and has some form of dementia or whatever. Always thought that was like some BS, you know. But basically, Wendy Williams is in a, she's currently in a conservatorship. And if you don't know what that is, it's kind of what Britney Spears was in for like over a decade. It's a legal arrangement. And it's basically where like a court appoints a person or some type of entity. Usually it's a person, but it can be an entity as well, to manage like your personal stuff and your medical stuff, your financial affairs. And it's for someone who is deemed unable to do for themselves due to some type of mental incapacitation, or sometimes they're physically incapacitated, or a host of different things, a severe alcoholic or something like that. And like I said, Britney was under a conservatorship for over a decade, and they controlled her money, career decisions, who she could hang around with, who she could date. And so Wendy Williams is caught up in the same thing. She mentioned the person, I forget what her name is, but it's a person who's her conservator. They're controlling her money, who she has access to, all types of stuff. And so these conservatorships, they can be really controversial because they're meant to protect someone that's like in a vulnerable state. But in the case of Britney, in the case of Wendy, they're restricting their freedoms and their autonomy. And it's leading to a lot of debates about, you know, is this fair? Do we need to take another look at the legality of conservatorships? And, you know, it's a form of abuse of power if it's in the wrong hands. And so this is why I wanted to bring up this topic, not just for the salaciousness of it, but I didn't always appreciate Wendy. I even had to kind of put her on my own little hiatus when she had her show out, because it was just, for me, it was a little bit too negative. And I didn't want to ingest negativity and stuff like that. So I kind of gave her a break. And then after a while, I don't know what happened, like a few years, I started watching her again. I could just enjoy it for its entertainment value. And now that she's gone, not like dead gone, but you know what I mean. She's gone from that show. I miss her. I'm one of those people that miss Wendy. And I think Sherry is doing a great job. And all of the talk show girls, you know, having, you know, hosted a radio show for a number of years now, it's not easy. And you guys can't see me. I can imagine having a camera in your face and learning how to carry a show for an hour, make people laugh and interview people. And that stuff is not easy. So definitely not coming for Sherry and some of the other girls or whatever. But they have not, for me, filled that void that Wendy has left. You know, no one's really tackling the hot topics the way she used to. The View does it, but the ladies on The View get on my nerves. They just kind of wore me out, especially this last, you know, politics cycle, this election cycle. I can't. I went from really liking Whoopi to just wishing she would just go somewhere and sit down. I don't want to hear nothing from her. But yeah, they have, Wendy has left a void, and I miss her. And I have a theory about how she got in this conservatorship. And if I was to talk with her, I think she would be like, you know what, that's very close to what happened. If she would just cut the shit and just tell us, this is what I think happened with Whitney. You know, all the stuff about her husband cheating and, you know, had a mistress and a baby and stuff on her and all of that. I think Wendy. I think Wendy knew a long time about her husband's infidelity. And Wendy is like, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, she's like a lot of women who will overlook a lot of shit. Some women will overlook a lot of shit, but they just don't want you to play in their face. And they don't want to be embarrassed in front of their family and in front of their friends. So they'll know about your little girlfriend and your little mistress or whatever you got, your little side chicks, but don't embarrass me. Just don't embarrass me. And we're gonna save face and we're gonna be a couple and everything's fine, you know, but don't embarrass me. I think you just went too far. When that story with the girl and the baby came out, I think that was just like, you know what? I was overlooking a lot, but I'm not gonna overlook this. And I think she devised, I know I'm right, and if I could talk to her privately, I know she would admit it to me. I think she devised a scheme to get him back and to make it to where he cannot take her money and live the good life with this side hoe, with the baby. Not to disparage her, but you know, that's what's happening. And so I think she devised this whole scheme, had a team of lawyers go through her contracts with the show, options for divorce, and I think she devised a way to play crazy or play incapacitated to where she would be released from the show. I think that whole feigning, I think from the feigning, that time when she fainted or whatever, I always felt like that was fake. All the feigning and that da-da-da-da-da, and, you know, we had a round of different folks filling in for her or whatever, and she was supposed to come back, but she didn't. I think all that was part of the plan, all the way down to the conservatorship, because she made it to where, okay, she's no longer on the show. She gets a divorce. I think her contract was written, and I saw it's a YouTube video or something where they were saying basically she would only have to pay her husband, continue paying her husband, if she was gainfully employed. And I think she devised a scheme to no longer be gainfully employed and to be released from that show. She set all this stuff up with the conservator. I think something happened with the conservator that she had appointed. I think once they received that power, that conservatorship, I don't know, if maybe someone else got in that person's ear and kind of manipulated the situation, or maybe the conservator just went rogue on her own. But I believe that Wendy devised a scheme to where she would not have to pay alimony or child support or just anything in that divorce. And I just think it went awry. And now she can't get out of the conservatorship because she has no power. She's so-called incapacitated. But if you look at those interviews that she did with the Breakfast Club and the interviews that she did with, and we're talking about the recent ones that she did with, what's his name, Don Lemon. Wendy sounds like the same Wendy that was doing the show. She's not incapacitated. She's not, from my observation. So I think her scheme worked, but it went awry because a conservatorship is one of those roles where once that person is placed in that, you're kind of at their mercy unless you set up some type of controls that can, what's the word I'm looking for? Basically, some type of checks and balances for the conservator. Like, okay, if this conservator starts acting crazy, then this person steps in. Or you got to have another extra layer of protection. I think in her plan, she did not think that far or think that that person would turn on her or be susceptible to other people being in her ear. And I think there were larger entities that got involved, like whatever network her show was on and stuff like that. And I think other people had a vested interest in Wendy not returning to that show and just a whole bunch of other stuff we don't know about. So all the, she has dementia and she's crazy and she's incapacitated, I don't buy that. I think she always had good sense. This was a plan. She wanted to get back at her husband. You're not going to take my money and live good with this other hoe. And I just think it was just as simple as that. And so now she's been on this press junket. She can't have a phone. She really can't have a computer. She's in this basically kind of like an old folks home type thing. But it's very, you know, high end. But, you know, she can't have the visitors she wants to have. So she's having to use her niece's phone to do these little sneak interviews with the Breakfast Club and other media outlets trying to give awareness to what's going on with her with this conservatorship. So long story short, I hope she's able to navigate this and get out of it. I can't imagine being under that type of system. You know, I just, my heart kind of goes out to her because, you know, she's trapped. She basically has an allowance. She can't just spend her money the way she wants to. Someone else has to give her an allowance of her own. It's just really fucked up. So, you know, some people say it's karma and all this type of stuff, but I don't know. I feel bad for Wendy. She's a person too. And if you just take the stuff that she did and say it as entertainment value, I think that's all. I don't think she really has a dog in, Wendy has a dog in the fight or the people she was talking about. She had a job to do. She was a radio host. She was a gossip person and later had a TV show with that same shtick. So it's just, it's like business. Like, she don't really care if this person's gay or if this person has a mistress, but she has a job to do. So anyway, enough about that. I hope she's able to get out of her conservatorship. If you haven't seen it, go and look up The Breakfast Club, Wendy Williams, Don Lemon, Wendy Williams, and you can kind of see what I see and just see that, you know, it's the same Wendy. She's just in a situation in which she needs some help. So Brittany was able to get out of hers as more people in the public sphere knew the gist of what she was in. So maybe, hopefully, it'll be the same for Wendy. Wendy, she's in her 60s. So, you know, let that woman enjoy her money and everything that she built and, you know, pick up the pieces from, you know, being single out here and just, you know, let her move on to her second acting piece is what I'm saying. All right, so what we got? 5 minutes. I want to tell you guys a little bit about this new, I'm going to take a drink of water. Sorry, my throat. I want to tell you guys a little bit about this new guilty pleasure that I have. So I don't watch a lot of TV. Most of what I watch is on YouTube. And I've sanitized my YouTube so that I don't really even see a lot of junk. But I've been watching these NDE stories. on YouTube. And of course, NDE stands for Near Death Experiences. And there's this whole channel that I've been watching that has a lot of great stories. I have it written down somewhere. The YouTube channel is called T&H Afterlife. And this young lady, she looks to be about 26, 27 years old, but she does interviews with people who have had near-death experiences. And all the stories are the same, but they're unique. The person has some type of accident or, you know, brush with death. They die for a short interim period. They have this experience in another realm, and then for some reason they're able to come back. And, you know, they come back and they share their stories. There's a whole community, an NDE community, that, you know, it's like a support group for, because there are not a lot of people who have had these experiences. So they develop communities, and because no one else understands really what they've gone through. I've never had a near-death experience. So, you know, when they're talking about things that they've experienced during this time, many people can't relate. So they build these communities and connect with other people that have had these experiences, and it's a safe space for them. And so this young lady on this YouTube channel, T&H Afterlife, if you're interested in this, go to the YouTube and type in T&H Afterlife, and you'll see that this is a channel that's hosted by a young woman who interviews a bunch of NDE people. And like I said, every story is different, and it's nuanced. They all experience this near-death thing. They've been pulled out of their bodies. They're looking down at themselves. You know, they travel to this realm of light. They see these beings that have no shape or form or face, just an outline. But they say that this being feels very familiar, like it's someone you know. Although they can't see who it is, it just feels like they know them. And all of them reference this feeling of being in this realm. It kind of feels, they say it's undescribable to you know, to humans, what we would be able to feel. But they said the closest feeling that humans could relate to or understand of what it feels like to be in that realm is this feeling of unconditional love for everyone and everything. And when they explain that when you're in this realm, time doesn't exist. So these brief moments that they're out of their bodies, in our time, it's like maybe 2 minutes or something like that. But when they're there, they say it feels like days, and time just has a different connotation. So it's like when they're in that realm, they understand everything. They have this sort of life review. I'm just touching on a few things that they all have similar stories about. They have this life review where they can see their entire life and go in and out of different moments. And then they all had the decision to either come back or stay. And for some reason, all of them seem to come back. I think they present it as a decision, but it really is a, you don't really have a choice. It's hard. You have to see it for yourself. But there's a purpose that these people are sent back to fulfill. And so they come back as changed people. And it's just really interesting to, these episodes are like maybe 35, 40 minutes. And you'll see people from all races, an older black guy, an Indian guy, older white lady. And I'm telling you, these stories are really something else to hear. And so you might want to check one of them out. Like I said, it's my new guilty pleasure. Whenever I have some time just to kind of chill and relax, this is what I like to watch. So I just wanted to share this with you guys. But that's pretty much about it. You know, this has been an enjoyable episode for me. I love just being able to talk about random stuff that's on my mind. So thanks for hanging in there with me. But we're going to wrap the show for tonight. But for our next episode, it's going to air Wednesday, February 26th at 8 p.m. Eastern. And our topic is going to be underconsumption. So underconsumption is one of the latest lifestyle trends that a lot of people have been gravitating to. It's going to have a lot of great information in that show, so be sure to tune in. I want to thank you again for spending your evening with me. And until next time, take care, be blessed, and have a good night, everybody.